Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and thank you so much for joining us this hour. Our next segment is in part about sexual harassment and assault, and we realize this can be a sensitive and triggering topic for listeners. And if you have small children listening, we wanted to let you know as well. We also want to be sure to tell you about an important resource for help and support. RAIN is this country's largest anti-sexual violence organization. Their national sexual assault hotline number is available to answer calls 24 hours a day. The number is 1-800-656-4673. Again, that's 1-800-656-4673 for RAIN. When author Laurie Holtz Anderson published her groundbreaking young adult novel Speak in 1999, in a pre-Me Too world, the subject of rape, especially of teenagers, was still incredibly taboo. But Speak disregarded norms and tackled sexual assault and trauma head-on, telling the story of Melinda, a young teenager who goes mute after being raped at an eighth-grade party. The book was widely acclaimed, became a finalist for the National Book Award, and led to an outpouring of young people coming to Laurie and quietly whispering in her ear, "Me too." But not everyone was so receptive. The book was banned by schools and libraries across the country. Parents and educators and librarians cited the book's difficult subject matter as, quote, inappropriate for children and young adults. Laurie was even silenced at one of her own book events. But Laurie forged on, becoming an advocate for intellectual freedom, and continued to speak to young people across the country about sexual assault, consent, and the importance of speaking your truth. Now, 20 years after Speak was first published, Laurie is not done speaking. She's ready to shout, actually. Her new memoir tells her story, chronicling her turbulent upbringing, her own rape and trauma, hashtag Me Too, and the process of healing that allowed her to speak up and speak out. The memoir, written in elegant and raw free verse poetry, is called Shout. It's out now, and you can see Laurie speaking with actor Mara Wilson at Housing Works tonight. But Laurie is in studio with us right now. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Allison. Thank you.
So what made you decide to finally tell your own story?
Well, when we saw the elevation of the Me Too movement, we have to always remember that it was begun in 2006 by Tarana Burke,
yeah.
Right? But some women in Hollywood made it a little bit more visible the fall of 2017, which was nice. It was
Time's up.
Talking about Harvey Weinstein and things like that. But then the backlash was immediate and ferocious, and that backlash made me so angry that I was burning inside, and the flames came out in the form of poems.
Were these poems that you wrote in the moment when you had a feeling? Were these poems that had sort of been bubbling up in your journals for years?
Yes, is the answer.
Yes and yes.
You know, I've been so graced with the ability to listen to so many survivors of sexual violence, male, female, people who identify outside the gender binary. There's a lot of wounded people in our culture and it has everything to do with how we talk or don't talk about sexuality. And so I've been, you know, so fortunate to hear so many stories, and I guess the fires had been waiting and they just exploded one day.
Why did you decide to write this memoir in poems and free verse?
This is a marrow experience for me, right? Mm-hmm. Being raped when I was 13 years old completely changed the course of my life, and it has everything to do with who I am as a woman today. And I think marrow experiences that are intense and long-lasting are best treated with the strongest form of narrative we have, which is poetry.
Why do you believe that's the strongest form?
Because after you read a poem that you connect with, you sit with it. You don't go on to see what happens next. It's a song, right? And it's a song that you allow to echo inside you.
You begin the memoir, not really with yourself, but a poem about your parents. Why did you want to start there?
To understand the culture of silence that I grew up with, to understand why I didn't say anything for 23 years, you need to understand what shaped my parents, who have both passed on to their greater reward, but they had so many struggles. So they came from a very quiet sort of culture where difficult things weren't talked about, and my father's PTSD really laid the foundation for the trauma in my family.
Yeah, you write quite a bit about him, and his presence creates tumult. But I also know that he's a poet himself, and
yes,
you regard him and revere him as a writer as well. How did having someone who you both revered but also knew was doing things that were terribly wrong, how did you as a kid square that? And then as an adult?
Yeah, it was complicated. I love my dad. I love my parents so much. And when I was a child, my dad was doing quite well. And he was just a larger-than-life character, and very charismatic, a good poet, a great preacher. Mm-hmm. But his alcoholism eventually caught up with him and caught up with our entire family, just as I was beginning to go through puberty. Like that wasn't hard enough already. So I was really alternately angry and fearful. I was so afraid that he would kill himself. He was very suicidal. So all the feelings.
He was also violent towards your mom. You wrote this piece titled Stained Glass Curtains in My Mother's Mouth. You write about this time. It was hard to read. You write, he didn't ever hit her again, but she lived in the fear that he would, which had everything to do with her habits of silence. Did you learn those habits of silence?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We didn't discuss things that were challenging in our family, I think because I kind of absorbed what my mom was showing me, which was, we don't want to upset your father. Because when he was sober and upset, he was just a big angry guy. But when he was drunk and upset, that could be scary. And then he wouldn't remember what he did the next day. It was complicated.
Isn't that difficult when you realize that the correct, just in terms of the immediate safety, the correct thing is to be silent, although it's also the worst thing for you?
Silence is often a survival tool. And whenever people ask me how to respond to somebody who's been a victim of sexual violence, the most important thing is to help them be safe in their world. They're often negotiating space, so they're sharing a space with the person who attacked them sometimes. And their safety has to come before everything.
It was a surprise in the book that we learn that the boy who raped you then dies in a sort of, it's not even a freak accident, and it was in a game of chicken. What do you remember about that time?
Well, I was raped. We moved a lot when I was a child, and we had moved again just before ninth grade started, so another new school district, another new apartment. And I met this boy through my brand new friends, and I thought he was possibly somebody who could be my first boyfriend, and I was pretty excited about that. And then he raped me one day just before school started, and a few weeks later he was dead, and honestly my first reaction was to cry out of gratitude, because seeing him in school was horrifying. And mm-hmm. I was so afraid that he would tell everybody what had happened, and then I would have the reputation of a girl that was easy to have sex with. And I was pretty... ninth grade was not my best year, Allison. It was a hard year.
When everything's going right, it's not someone's best year.
That's a good point.
You know, it's to the point, and add that on, what you were dealing with. You call him it. Why did you choose it?
Well, that was actually a throwback to what I had a device I had used in Speak, where Melinda Sordino, whose attack is very different from mine, but I borrowed my emotional truth,
right?
My emotional truth of what it feels like to be silenced. And part of her survival mechanism is to only call him it and keep him at a distance and keep him, you know, not even really acknowledging his name through most of the book, because he wasn't a human being to her. He was... Mm-hmm. The person who had hurt her.
I would love to have you read Diagnosis.
Okay.
Can you give our listeners a little bit of a setup for it?
Yeah, it was, nobody ever talked to me about sexual violence when I was a child. My mother could barely talk about menstruation. She just handed me the box of tampons. And so looking back, it was at the time I was just trying to get through every day. Mm-hmm. But looking back, I can now with, you know, I'm a mom, I'm a grandmother at this point, and I have so much more sympathy and love for the 13-year-old girl who was struggling with this. So Diagnosis is sort of me trying to have perspective on what I was feeling and on how I was beginning to show what I was feeling.
This is Laurie Holtz Anderson from her new memoir, Shout. This is Diagnosis.
I knew that if I fell and scraped my knee, ejected headfirst through a windshield, chopped off a finger, or lost a leg to a shark, I'd apply pressure to stop the bleeding. use towels, blankets, Goodwill sweaters, whatever it took to start clotting, slow the fluid loss. I'd close my wounds with fishhooks and twine, or a stapler, or a nail gun, welding torch to reconnect my spine. I'd knit skin grafts if necessary. After I pulled myself back together, I'd need a doctor, because my dark corners would be invaded by bacteria, viruses, parasites, and more, infectious vectors of disease, some lethal, some merely debilitating chronic cripplers. I knew that. I paid attention in health. But I had never seen a first aid kit for the spirit, or heard the word trauma to describe the way I'd hide, slide through the days unseen, or scream into the pillows at the bottom of my closet, door closed, even though no one was home. Rape wounds deeply, splits open your core with shrapnel. The stench of the injury attracts maggots, which hatch into clouds of self-doubt, self-loathing. The dirt you feel inside you nourishes anxiety, depression, and shame, poisoning your blood, festering in your brain, until you will do anything to stop feeling the darkness rising within. Anything to stop feeling. Untreated pain is a cancer of the soul that can kill you.
My guest is Lori Holtz Anderson. The name of her memoir is Shout. It is out today. What kind of coping mechanisms did you come up with? After hearing that, you realize all the pain that you were in, the suffering that you were experiencing, your desire to make it just stop. How did you cope? And which ones were successful and which ones weren't?
Well, the first ones were really dumb and really self-defeating. I kind of took a page from my parents' guidelines because my parents were drinking very heavily with their own pain. But I didn't want to drink. So instead, I got high. I smoked a lot of weed in ninth grade. And at the time I thought, well, this is great because it's what a great way to anesthetize yourself from what you're feeling. But then you can't feel your place in the world. And I weirdly quickly was turning into a kid going nowhere fast. And that had to change. So that was not, ninth grade was just a big puff of smoke. 10th grade, I started the work of trying to find friends who were in healthier places. With some really wonderful support from some coaches and teachers, joined sports teams and became an athlete, which was awesome. And my slow climb out of the pit of despair began there.
You wrote, "God bless that short gym teacher for caring enough to call me out and hold me up." What was it the teacher, or was it the sort of the scaffolding of sports that you have to be somewhere and you have to perform and you have to concentrate on only that? What was it about that period that really helped you?
Well, the first thing was actually one of the teachers had seen me. Like, I was this invisible student for all of them. It felt like I was this invisible student. I'm sure people were trying, but I couldn't feel them. But the nice thing about sports is if you're depressed and you're starting to get sweaty once a day and getting some exercise, all the good chemicals come into your brain. I think that had a huge impact on me. And then, because I like sports and I wanted to compete, I had to start paying attention in class, which I hadn't been doing. that's the only reason I did my homework, was so I could compete.
Your parents had to notice that you were a different kid during this year. At what point did they ever ask you about it? And when did you feel comfortable talking to them about the rape?
They didn't notice. Really, my house was on fire. In her late years, my mother always insisted that I loved high school and I had a wonderful experience. Her ability to compartmentalize was pretty staggering.
That was her coping mechanism.
Exactly. You know, the stories we tell ourselves, as mm-hmm. Brené Brown says, right? Oh, boy, yeah. So they didn't, I think that in if they did notice, that's not true. I think they did notice something was up, but it was characterized as, you know, adolescent turmoil, typical. And thus, when I came to them in my junior year and said, I really, really want to be an international exchange student, bless my parents forever for saying yes to that.
My guest is Lori Holtz Anderson. The name of her new memoir is Shout. It's out today. We'll continue with Lori after a quick break.
WNYC supporters include HSS, ranked number one hospital in the country for orthopedics for 9 straight years, according to the 2019 U.S. News and World Report, in Manhattan and in Nassau, Westchester, Bergen, and Fairfield counties. More at hss.edu. Atlantic Theater Company, presenting the U.S. premiere of The Mother, a new play about a woman grasping for stability by French writer Florian Zeller, starring Isabelle Huppert and Chris Noth. Tickets at atlantictheater.org. WNYC is a media partner of Brooklyn Public Library, presenting Lit Film, a festival of films about writers, March 18th to 24th. Maya Angelou, Margaret Atwood, Pablo Neruda, and more. bklynlibrary.org/BPL presents.
I'm Jamie Floyd, host of All Things Considered. The outpouring of support during our recent fundraiser has been overwhelming. We're so grateful to everyone who made this pledge drive such a success. If you haven't had a chance to donate yet, you can still contribute anytime at WNYC.org or by calling 888-376-WNYC. And again, thank you so much.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Lori Holtz Anderson. She's the author of the book Speak, as well as the new memoir, her memoir called Shout, the true story of a survivor who refused to be silent. When we last left before the break, as a kid, you were headed off to Europe to study. What did that time do for you? And what did taking yourself out of your situation let you do?
I got to start all over again. I was 16 years old when I left the United States. I was part of the American Field Service Exchange Program. And I spent 13 months living on a pig farm in Denmark, which was the best place in the entire world. And it had everything to do both with the family with whom I lived, who are just made of love and compassion, and I'm still quite close with them, but also the community. The culture of the school was quite different than the culture of American high schools. There was a focus on genuine interaction with people and integrity and kindness. Lots of really good coffee and pastry, too.
When you came back home, what was reentry like?
That was very interesting because, you know, I was there in the late 70s. There was no internet. I'd had 3 phone conversations with my parents over 13 months. And we all had to adjust to sort of the new shape of me because I was in a much more mature mindset. And I think I came back with more forgiveness and understanding that they were fighting their own battles. It wasn't just that they were ignoring me. They had hard stuff to work with.
And when you forgive people, it frees up a lot of space.
Oh, it sure does. Oh my gosh, yeah. And so we sort of, my dad and I, it took us another 20 years to really kind of fall back into loving each other properly. My mom and I didn't take as long.
Well, they always say it took you 18 years to get to that point, so it would make sense that it would take you another 18,
exactly.
You know, to remedy and heal the wounds. We mentioned a little bit at the top, back when we first started talking, about how when you went out, you wrote Speak. We're going to fast forward a little bit. So you write this book. It really touches people. It really gets people to start talking about teenage assault and rape and teenage girls and boys. This happens too. And you go out and you start to go on speaking tours. And despite the accolades and the people coming up to you and saying, this really is important to me, you met with quite a bit of resistance. Can you share some of the resistance you got and what they really seemed to be resisting?
I never thought the book would be published. And then the fact that somebody might want to censor it came as an astounding surprise. But first, we have to shout out to all those amazing educators who for 20 years have been teaching this in the classroom and who themselves have had their jobs threatened because of the censorship attempts. What I've come to understand about parents who want to censor this book is they feel that they're trying to protect their children. Even though sexual assault is in the media all the time, kids know about it, kids mm-hmm. are dealing with it. What their parents are really doing is that they're trying to stop having to have the need to have an awkward conversation. These are parents, I can love and respect their fears and honor those fears. But honestly, parents are called to do the hard work of parenting, and that means pushing beyond our fears. And you want your kids to be able to come to you about these topics. When you close off the conversation, you're guaranteeing your child the possibility of having an adolescent experience like mine, suffering needlessly in silence for decades.
You've chosen a poem to read called Innocence, since we're on this topic. Could you please set this up?
Absolutely. This is sort of my love letter to those parents, trying to get them to look beyond their own fear and understand that there's a bigger thing to deal with here. Part of being a parent is teaching your kid how to cross the road, teaching your child how to drive, and teaching your children consistently for years what healthy sexuality is, what consent looks like, and model consent. I mean, these are all grown-up things, and you're the grown-up, so let's do it better.
This is Lori Holtz Anderson.
Innocence. Censoring my books in the name of innocence will not build the fence you want. It's not a defense against danger or stranger, the friend or foe whose hands want to know the feel of your child, your baby girl, or maybe your boy, a toy for their yearning for violence. Depravity, the gravity of which will pull your child into wild denial, her pain untamed by your drugs prescribed, or her drugs street dirty. Nothing can offer relief from the reality that you failed and jailed her happiness in a grave too deep for forgiveness. The false innocence you render for them by censoring truth protects only you.
Lori, you've been honored by the National Coalition Against Censorship for your fights for intellectual freedom. Tell us a little bit about the work you do to help combat censorship.
At first, I used to get really angry and heartbroken. Yeah, I just wanted to throw things. And then I learned that my job in these situations, first and foremost, is to listen. If an educator alerts me to a censorship attempt in their school district, it's not my job to go, this outsider to come in and demand things in front of the school board, but to ask the educators and the librarians, how can I help? And that often means providing people with resources. Some brilliant doctoral students have written their dissertations on how using Speak in the Classroom changes students' perception of rape mythology. So we've got great data, we've got great information and resources. So I have to be, and just kind of find my lane within the given community and be a resource for them.
I'm guessing that your book, your personal story, will be a terrific conduit between what some people are experiencing and the help they need, because you're there as a survivor, as someone who has done magnificently for themselves and also is helping other people. Was that ever in your calculus that you're telling your own story could help move this movement forward?
I never thought about it in terms of the larger cultural movement, but I realized early on when I was visiting schools that what teenagers really need is adults to model what it looks like to be a survivor. Kids are literally dying because the adults in their lives are reticent, aren't sharing, that they went through hard things too. And there is no shame in being the victim of any kind of sexual violence or any kind of violence. There is no shame. There is only pride and respect to be had for survival. So modeling survival is something I've been trying to do for 20 years, and Shout is the next step in that.
At the back of your book, just so people know, there are several pages of resources for your readers regarding sexual violence and mental health. Before we let you go, is there one more poem that you would like to read, one that really you think our listeners might enjoy or learn or just be able to think about for the rest of the afternoon?
Well, I think we are at such an interesting time here. And the question is, what do we do next? And so I have a poem called The Reckoning. Do we have time for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Because we have to begin to imagine the world in which we want to live. So this is part of my fantasy for that. It's called The Reckoning. The reckoning is born as whispers, which turn into snowflakes, melt into rain, weep upon onto quiet fields, wake seeds buried in the muck. Dadmen, madmen, fathers of daughters unpowered by your brothers of the hunt, your bull and guilt creeping filth like a 5 o'clock shadow, you're afraid. The reckoning feeds seeds that stretch in the night, to eat the dark, drink the moon, demand the dawn, claim the sun, rub it on our skins, soak it into our bones. So afraid, manly men, you're unmade by the mirror, horrified, 'cause no matter how hard you try, how loud the cheers amplified by surround sound system of institutional lies, you can still hear us. The reckoning transforms us into tigers, hunting you down one by one, dragging you by the nape of your dirty necks to face her, face him, face them, the souls possessed of the bodies you stole for what you thought was just a few minutes. And after the crop is harvested, the fields cleared of rocks and stubble, swords beaten into plowshares, dirt furrowed, the new seeds, planted deep and cared for, will grow into strong children with kind hands and strong bodies and honorable hearts, the first generation unscarred, untouchable. That's your loss and our triumph.
The name of her new memoir is Shout. Lori Holtz Anderson, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It's been a delight, Allison. Thank you.
And Lori will be with Mara Wilson at Housing Works tonight. You're listening to All of It on WNYC.